And we have now a presentation by Denis Kozlenko, IBR2 spectrometer complex, current state, plan of developments, and recent results. You have 40 minutes, including discussion. So please, Denis.
Thank you. Good morning, dear colleagues. In my today report, I will overview the current state of the spectrometer complex of our IBR2 high flux pulse reactors, and also development plans for next few years within the 7-year plan of strategic development of the GINR. It's working. Okay. So you can see here the layout of our experimental hall. We started. Okay, you can see here the layout of our experimental hall of IBR2 flux pulse reactor. After the end of the reactor modernization and power startup in 2011, we had 11 instruments. And now, at the current state, we have 15 instruments in operation in total. This includes 8 diffractometers listed here, 3 reflectometers, 1 small angle scattering instruments, 2 inelastic neutron scattering spectrometers, neutron radiography and tomography instruments. We also have 1 project of reconstruction of reflectometer reflex in collaboration with BMBF project into small angle Spinecha neutron spectrometer. I remind you the priority directions of our fundamental and applied research. In fundamental research, our directions are nanoscale physics, physics and chemistry of functional materials, physics and chemistry of complex liquids and polymers, and physics of soft condensed matter. In the field of applied research, this is a structural characterization of functional materials used in different technologies, including nanotechnologies, non-destructive control of residual stresses and internal organization of bulk materials and products, and also texture analysis of geomaterials and constructional materials. If you consider diffraction methods in fundamental research, we have 4 diffractometers for these purposes. High-resolution Fourier diffractometer, dedicated for precise structural studies of crystalline materials, using so-called reverse time-of-flight methods with a high resolution of about 0.1%. Real-time diffractometer for real-time studies of processes like chemical reaction, melting processes, water hydration, and so on. Okay. We also have DNTWELL diffractometer for studies of structure and dynamics of condensed matter under extreme conditions in high pressure range up to 7 GPa. And new diffractometer DN6 also for studies under extreme conditions in order of magnitude extended high pressure range. I will start with the high resolution Fourier diffractometer. Last year we celebrated a quarter of century of operation of this instrument. It utilizes so-called reverse time of flight methods, which has been developed by physicists from our institute in collaboration with physics from Finland and St. Petersburg nuclear physics instrument. The main concept is to apply a special kind of neutron chopper with a special slits, which splits our long pulse of IBR2 reactor into a sequence of short pulses with a time duration of half width at half maximum, about 15 microseconds. And in this case, using such a technique and special Fourier procedure, it's possible to get very high resolution at short flight paths at about 20 meters. For instance, at other neutron centers, at pulse neutron sources, high resolution is achieved mostly by long flight paths of about 100 meters. And typically for resolution for displacing of 2 angstrom and backscattering for 2 theta scattering angle of 152 degrees, it's possible to achieve resolution about less than 0.1%. And this is one of the best achieved resolutions among other leading neutron sources like SNS, JPARC, ISIS, and ALL. This instrument also has a very large neutron flux, about 10^7 power. and collides appropriate displacing range from 0.7 to 4 angstrom, which is suitable for studies of different types of crystalline materials. As an example, you can see here one of the model examples, study of some superconducting, high-temperature superconducting ceramics yttrium 1 to 3 with medium resolution of 1% and high resolution of 0.1%. You see here the great difference. A few years ago, a global modernization of this instrument, which has been recommended as one of quite very effective, has been done. A new free chopper has been installed, produced by Miratron company, and also new neutron guide has been manufactured with a vertical parabolic focusing to increase the incident neutron flux on the sample position. I can say that only a mirror part of this guide has been manufactured by Swiss Neutronics company, while the available vacuum casing has been used and the mirror were installed in the same casing, but with a vertical parabolic focusing. You see here results of this modernization. You can see here old and new pattern. This is a spectral distribution of neutron solar wavelengths measured with a vanadium standard sample. And here you can see the gain factor for studies measured for aluminium 2-3 oxide standard. You can see that gain factor is very typically from about 2.3 to 3 times, so it's quite a tremendous gain in intensity. And now it gives possibility either to produce more experiments up to 3 times, or to use samples with a several times smaller volume and extend possibilities of the experiments with these instruments, especially for real-time studies of electrode materials on different electric current sources at this instrument. If you consider a further modernization, which is planned in next time, it's planned to develop the new wide aperture backscattering detector for this instrument based on a zinc sulfide scintillator with lithium 6 fluoride of such a complex geometry. It will cover the very high solid angle of about 1.5 steradian, and its total area is about 14 square meters. And using the time focusing, you can see here geometrical contribution to resolution function for different models. It will be possible to keep high resolution despite the large solid angle covered and scattering angles like here. It is expected that construction of such detector will allow to increase further the neutron counting of this instrument in top 10 times. And I can say that a special project for development of this detector has been included into the team 1122, which is utilized in the spectrometer complex department of our laboratory. Now I'm going to the real-time diffractometer for real-time studies. It was a reconstruction of old DN2 diffractometer. It was a special project dedicated to these activities, which has been active in the period from 2012 to 2015. And it was successfully completed. I can say that practically new diffractometer has been constructed at the old place. New mirror neutron guide has been constructed, a beamforming system, and a large set of detectors has been installed, including backscattering detector, intermediate angle detectors, like special point counters and also position sensitive counters. And one of the recent installation, this is a small angle detector for forward scattering shown here. This is an axial detector. You can see a picture here. This instrument has a rather large neutron flux of 5 multiplied to 10 to 6 power neutron per centimeter square per second. Resolution varies from about 1% for back scattering to about 5% to forward scattering. Large displacing range from 1 to about 80 angstrom gives possibility to measure quite various types of objects, starting from crystalline materials and ending to lipid membranes. And typical measurement times from about 30 seconds to 10 minutes, and these parameters are comparable with analogs in leading neutron centers like SNS, JPARC, and ILL. And as an example, you can see here a reaction of thermal decomposition of calcium oxalate monohydride, which has been measured into this reaction stage in temperature range from 20 to 700 cesium degrees. You can see here development of diffraction patterns. In total now, this instrument options are available for cooling between 10 and 30 K and also from 300 to 1000 K for heating. And because the basic configuration of this instrument has been developed in the further period of time, most efforts will be concentrated on development of its sample environment. You can see here some available sample environments which will be developed. This is a refrigerator, ongoniometer, thermostat, humidity cell, electrochemical cells. I can say that electrochemical cells will be developed further. In addition, it's planned to buy new furnaces to extend the pressure to temperature range for higher than 1000 K to about 1500 K. So it will be such activities related to this instrument. Next instrument is DN12 spectrometer. It was the first spectrometer for studies of crystalline materials under extreme conditions. It has a moderate neutron flux of about 2 multiplied to 10 in 6 power. Average resolution of about 2%, which is enough for high pressure studies. The displacing range covered from about 0.8 to 13 angstrom is good enough for simultaneous study of crystalline magnetic structure of materials. And available pressure range up to 7 GPa using sapphire anvil high pressure cells. The sample volume is inside is about 1 or 2 cubic millimeters, and it's possible simultaneously to perform experiments with a CCR-based cryostat in temperature range from 10 to 300 K. And this is a scattering, axial scattering geometry of these instruments. Two detector rings are available, installed at scattering angles of 90 and 45 degree. Further development include creation of so-called PTH sample environment system. PTH are stay for different thermodynamic parameters like pressure, temperature, and applied external magnetic field. And this is a special project realized in the complex of spectrometers department. It was extension of this project, and I hope in a few years it will be finished. You can see here design of this system. And it will be possible to perform experiments at simultaneous change of pressure, temperature, and high magnetic fields in the range up to about 4 Tesla. In addition, it's planned to develop a large volume press for high pressure up to 30 GPa and high temperature up to about 2000 K experiment, also this setup. And this activity will be in the future. It will start this year. It will continue for next about 3-4 years. As a conceptual extension of the studies of microsamples under extreme conditions at our reactor, taking into account positive experience with DN12, a more modern diffractometer DN6 has been created a few years ago. Its basic configuration, constructed in about 2012, gave intensity gain up to 12 times compared to DN12. And it became possible to utilize standardly diamond anvil cells to generate pressures of next order of magnitude up to about 50 GPa. Also, this diffractometer is equipped with a cryostat and the temperature range available from 4 to 300 K. This diffractometer is also equipped with two detectors for 90 and 45 degree. And you can see here some examples of high pressure studies. Chromium-203 oxide. This data obtained in sapphire anvil pressure cell with a large sample volume of about 2 cubic millimeters at pressure range up to 5 gigapascal. And here you can see diffraction data up to 35 gigapascal, third part of the megabar scale, obtained with the same sample with a volume of about 200 of cubic millimeter. As a further development, recently we have designed and fabricated a neutron parabolic focusing device for DN6. You can see its photo here. It has been done by Swiss Neutronics company. It has a 7-meter lens. And so, in fact, we just replaced the ending part of our neutron guide by this focusing device. As a result, we have a very large neutron gain. And now we have about 3 to multiplied by 10 to 7 power neutron intensity. You can see how focusing works here, the start of the focusing device. And this is a focusing position, very good focus. And this linear size is about 5 millimeters. You can see here a comparison of old and new spectral distributions of neutrons or the wavelengths. And you can see that our gain factor for wavelengths above about 2.5 angstrom ranges from 6 to 7 times. So it's quite a huge gain in intensity. As a result of time focusing, we had some decrease of resolution from 2 to about 2.5%, and other characteristics remains unchanged, like displacing range up to 12 angstrom. Pressure range, it will be about 50 GPa routinely, maybe higher. Temperature range the same. And I can say that these parameters give this instrument in the top level among 11 class of instrument and other advanced neutron sources like SNS, JPARC, and others, and achievable pressure scale is comparable with SNAP at SNS in Oak Ridge laboratory. And if you compare with initial configuration of DN6, we have average incident neutron flux gain in 6 times, and if you compare to DN12, it's 35 times. And now we have another developed in progress the replacement of the remaining tail part of the mirror neutron guide, remaining 17 meters. Now we utilize it with the mirrors with the reflection index m equal to 1, and we will change it to super mirror with m equal to 2. It is expected it will give another gain in intensity in about 2 times. If you consider the application of diffraction methods for applied research, we have 3 diffractometers. Free stress diffractometers for determination of residual stresses in construction materials, industrial products, and factory-made goods. It also utilizes reverse time-of-flight methods, and it's very close to free diffractometers, but due to special geometry, it has mostly diffraction at 90-degree scattering angle. As a result, the special resolution a little bit worse. It's about 0.2%, so it's about twice worse than at high-resolution free diffractometer. And we also have 2 diffractometers dedicated to geophysical research for texture analysis of geological materials like rock minerals, but also construction materials can be studied on well SCAT diffractometer, and also Epsilon MDS diffractometers for residual stress analysis in geological materials, rocks and minerals. These diffractometers have been made historically by German group at our laboratory. And now we have collaboration with the Karlsruhe Institute of Technology for Epsilon and with Kiel, GMR Institution of Kiel for SCAT diffractometer. And normally, scientists from these institutions in Germany operate these instruments. In these instruments, high resolution is achieved by a long flight path. This is a classical geometry. So they have a long flights of about 100 meters, and as a result, resolution is about from 0.3 to 0.4%. These instruments measure modernization focused on replacement of neutron guides has been finished in 2012, and neutron guides, 2 guides of 100 meter each length has been replaced by new ones. At Fourier stress diffractometers, new radial collimators has been installed, you can see here. As a result, gauge volume, which is selected in scanning procedure in determination of residual stresses, has been reduced to about 1.8 millimeters. It's less than 2 millimeters, and it's very good value, comparable with the best world analogs. And in addition, special loading machine LM20 has been installed at this instrument. It allows studies in situ at tension and compression loads for the studied samples. And further development will include the replacement of the available old scintillation detector ASTAR installed at 90 degree by new models, which are currently developed, and some of models has already been fabricated in a complex of spectrometer department of our laboratory. And also development of new Fourier chopper for this instrument, which current chopper is also quite old, and it was operational for more than 10 years already. But it will be a little bit different design than previous one, and it will be fabricated by Astrium company. affiliated with the Airbus Corporation. So it will be a little bit different design adapted for this geometry of this instrument. Also, several years ago, a Fourier stress spectrometer has been moved from GKSS Neutron Center, closed in about 10 years ago in Germany. It also utilizes Fourier correlation diffractometry techniques, and it was an idea to install it at one of the three channels of our reactor to use it for testing of modern correlation diffractometry techniques and also detectors. In the last year, main components of this diffractometer has been installed in beamline number 13 of our reactor. You can see here the neutron guide Fourier chopper of another construction than utilized previously, and detector system also with a scattering angle of about 90 degrees. Here you can see some of the first results obtained at this instrument a few months ago, which has been done with some steel sample, and also resolution function. You can see that best resolution available at this instrument up to about 0.5%. It appears that this diffractometer has quite an old neutron guide and detector system, and as a first stage of this reconstruction, to improve its parameter, it's planned to replace the current neutron guide in the new one with a reflection coefficient m equal to 2, and also with a linear conversion focusing to increase the incident neutron flux on the sample. It will be done in the next couple of years. If they consider other instruments, it's planning to also develop the sample environment and detector systems and SCAT and Epsilon diffractometers. As an example, I show you new opportunities of Epsilon. A special in situ triaxial pressure experiments now can be done here with special pore pressure cell. With such a parameter, it's possible to apply axial pressure, confining pressures, and pore pressure, which provides wide prospects for studies of rocks and minerals under different types of the loads. If you continue to study some soft matter and nanomaterials, nanostructures, for these purposes, we use small-angle neutron scattering and reflectometries. We have a UMO small-angle scattering spectrometer, N3 reflectometer, RIMUR reflectometer with polarized neutrons, Reflex, also reflectometer with polarized neutrons, which is now reconstructed into SPINEHA small-angle neutron scattering spectrometer, and one of the most modern instruments, Grains multifunctional reflectometer with the possibility to study liquid and soft matter interfaces, while Reflex and RIMUR can be studied only for solid matter interfaces, like different layered magnetic nanostructures of different type, also just usual magnetic nanostructures. I will start with the consideration of the most recently constructed instrument, the Grains reflectometer with horizontal scattering geometry. You can see here the scheme of this instrument and some basic units, like units of the beam forming system, special samples for soft matter samples, and here also special aperture to control the parameters of incident neutron beam. It's possible to achieve angle resolution dependent on the core range from 3 to 10%, and the neutrons are detected by position sensitive detector from 20 to 20 centimeters square, which is a gas field, and the core range available is from 5,000 to about 0.5 reverse angstrom. Last year, in the framework of the team 1121, it was a special project included and approved by PAC called a System for Neutron Operanda Monitoring and Diagnostics of Materials and Interfaces for Electrochemical Energy Storage Devices, which will be realized until the end of 2020. And in the framework of this project, a special sample environment systems like electrochemical samples, cells, will be developed for studies of the processes at the interfaces of like electrode-liquid electrolyte by neutral reflectometry will be utilized. You can see here some sketch of the pilot cells and some data available both in a two-dimensional and usual formats like reflection coefficient. And in addition, it's planned to equip this instrument with a polarization analysis, and now polarization analyzer is in development and will be fabricated soon. You can see here its design, and it will be possible to perform experiments also with polarization analysis options. It will be done also at the scale of next 3 years or 5 years. A small angle scattering spectrometer UMO, which is machine operating from the start of IBA2 in 1984, it's a very effective machine. It combines very high neutron flux, incident neutron flux, 4 multiplied by 10 to 7 neutron per centimeter square per second. Current is not a record, it's from about 7,000 to 1/2 reverse angstrom. And core resolution ranges from 5 to 20%. By very unique feature of this instrument is a dynamic, very high dynamic core range. The ratio of maximum and minimum core values is equal to 90, which is achieved by application of two detector systems. We have two detectors, which measure data simultaneously. They are combined into one curve. And the typical measurement times are very fast. Typical times are 10 minutes. So it's possible to perform very many experiments, and it's one of the highly overloaded instruments, very popular from users at our neutron source. Further developments of UMO will include development of new incident neutron beam collimator. It's already been has been designed, and it will come to fabrication stage, I hope, this year. And also modernization of detector system. Currently we have axial type detectors, and modernization will include their replacement subsequently by position sensitive detector. So it will be possible to analyze also anisotropy, scattering distributions in the sample. And it will be done on the scale of the realization of the 7-year plan, this modernization of detector system as well. We also have reflectometer EMURF with polarized neutrons, which typically used for studies of different magnetic layered nanostructures. You can see here its parameters. It has a polarized neutron flux about 3 multiplied to 10 in 4 power. Available wavelength range from 0.9 to 10 reverse angstrom. The detectors are detected, the scattered neutrons are detected in two theta range from 1 to 100 milliradian, and the resolution and wavelength scale is about 2%. And you can see here some data. It has a reflection coefficient more or less standard for such types of the instruments, and the modernization includes the installation of new polarization analyzer. It has been already fabricated and installed into working position. You can see how it looks like. It combines 150 sweeper mirrors inside, and here you can see polarization. It's quite effective. This is one modernization option. And in addition, the project within our team is realized, which will be end in 2018. Project of isotope identifying neutron reflectometry. The idea is simultaneously to detect not only neutrons from the samples, but also charged particles like alpha particles and also gamma radiation, and get all this information also for analysis of the distribution of the scattering density over the layers of the nanostructure. This project is realized quite successfully. For instance, you can see here detector based on high purity germanium for gamma channel. This equipment is already purchased, and it will be soon tested at the beamline. And for alpha channel also, good progress is achieved. And this project will be realized on a reasonable time scale within the planned schedule. At the reflex reflectometer, we have a pioneering project of its reconstruction into SPINEHA small angle neutron scattering spectrometer. It utilizes concepts of so-called time gradient fields. We have a coils produced electromagnetic fields which are inclined with respect to neutron beam, and it's possible to perform special SPINEHA experiments and get quite a large SPINEHA length interval from about 100 to 5,000 angstrom and determine these linear sizes of studied object with very good resolution. This instrument, previously it was just a vacuumed collimator for a beam-forming system, and it was replaced by a 30-meter lens neutron guide. As a result, we get the order of magnitude of intensity. And previous year, most important elements of this instrument has been also installed in VOG field, VOG positions, and first model experiments has been done. You can see here the spin echo signal obtained. This configuration involved is working on such plateaus of neutron wavelengths, which are created by such construction of the sequence of these coils, and it's possible to analyze together these curves. This is a spin echo curve, and if you study a real object, you will get some special curve. From analysis of which we can get information about object. This project also realized quite successfully, and I think in 2-3 years we will get fully completed configuration of this instrument, and experiments, already scientific experiments, will be performed with such setup. Now I come to inelastic neutron scattering. We have two inelastic neutron scattering spectrometers. The NIRA spectrometer designed for studies of vibrational spectra of molecular crystals is a spectrometer in inverted geometry. You also have DIN2PI spectrometer in direct geometry for studies of lattice dynamics and atomic dynamics of liquids and amorphous materials. And it was a special option also at DIN12 spectrometer for study of vibrational spectra of hydrogen-containing materials under pressure up to about 10 GPa. If you consider the NIRA spectrometer, it's shown here, you can see here its detector system. This instrument has a long flight path of about 110 meters. Simultaneously with diffractometer SCAT and Epsilon. Also, this long neutron guide has been fully replaced in 2012, and that time gain factor of about 2 has been achieved in neutron incident beam intensity here. This diffractometer has spectrometer has now neutron flux at about 4 multiplied to 10 to 6 power, and the energy transfer range is up to about 500 millielectron volts. For energy analysis, two options I used, beryllium filter cooled and also pyrolytic graphite analyzers, and you can see here that best achievable resolution is about 2%. And here you can see some data like vibrational spectra and density of phonon states. As ongoing modernization, it's also planned to install the parabolic focusing device to this instrument. It has already been designed and now it's in fabrication stage. It will be about 25 meters length and it's fabricated by a Swiss Neutronic company. We expect that it will be another gain in about 2 or even 3 times at this instrument by this modernization, which will be finished, I think, either by the end of this year or in beginning of 2019. If you consider DIN2PI, this quite an old spectrometer in direct geometry. If you consider incident energy of 10 millielectron volt, which is selected by special mechanical chopper, the incident neutron beam flux for such energy is about 2 multiplied to 10 and 3 power neutron per centimeter square per second. It has a large detector band covering scattering angles from 5 to 135 degrees, and the incident neutron energy range can be varied in the interval from 1 to about 30 millielectron volts. Some time ago, about 5 years ago, a special neutron beam concentrator has been installed at this instrument, and the total incident neutron flux gain in about 1.8 times has been achieved, and energy resolution is about from 4 to 10%, dependent on the selected incident neutron energy range. And this is one of the typical applications of this instrument for study of dynamics of such liquid material. Here, this is a liquid gallium. And you can see here some data for determination of diffusion coefficient. This instrument for many years has been operated by a special laboratory from Obninsk Institute of Power Engineering. But recently this laboratory has been closed and this spectrometer has been given to us, and now we are not yet developed the modernization concept of it. It's planned that during this year, maybe around summer, it will be a special workshop here, which will be dedicated to development of the concepts of these two inelastic neutron scattering spectrometers, NEAR and DIN2PI. And I expect that likely in the second half of this year, we will have more detailed proposal for modernization of this spectrometer and also for modernization of the detector system of NEAR spectrometer, which is also another planning development for the scale of the next 5 years. In 2013, we created a new spectrometer for neutron radiography and tomography. It was created at 14 beamline at our reactor. You can see its basic elements here. It is used a CCD-based detector to get images. Since that time, it becomes quite popular. It has own users in different fields, in material science, archaeology, paleontology, and many others. You can see here some parameters. Here, it has an incident neutron beam flux at about 5 multiplied to 10 to 6 power, and spatial resolution typical ranges from about 150 to 250 micrometers, depending on the scintillator used, and of course field of view. And you can see here some example of the studies. This is a Skitian gold jar. You can see here picture, and also its tomography, and you can see how it's constructed, and also that something is still inside for many centuries since it has been fabricated to now, because it's dated to Scythian times. It's about 1,000 years old. We had some problems with the radiation damaging of our detector of this instrument, and the special concepts of two-mirror optical system has been applied. So we have now reflection of a neutron not from one mirror, like it was in this detector system, but in consequence of two mirrors. And this system has been fabricated, you can see here, in Belarus by SOU Instrument Company. It also has high-precision optics, and by its utilization, which has been made a few months ago, we expect that our lifetime of detector system will be increased at least in 3 times. And one of our new ideas is development of new small-angle scattering and imaging spectrometer at 10A channel. We have a splitter at this channel. At one end of the splitter, Gorin reflectometer operates, and the second part has been free. This concept has been developed in the framework of the last 7-year plan, and from the beginning of current 7-year plan, we started its realization. You can see basic concepts. Here it's a bender, which declining the beam axis by about 8 degrees to be confined in the space-time available between Gorin's reflectometer and reflex reflectometer. And also, it will be movable collimation system. For sun's options, we will have here beamforming system with M1, and it will be moved with just simple collimator, vacuumed collimator without any mirrors, which will be installed at short flight path about 8 meters from the bender end for neutron imaging. And this is detector system of the sun's instrument. This is a vacuum tube of about 10 meter length. It will be a movable position sensitive detector with a size is at least 64 to 64 centimeters or even meter by meter. It will depend on financing. And so you can see here two possible setups which will cover different times of this spacing range. And here you can see the planned parameters of this instrument. It's planned to get the available core range from 0 to 300 to about 1/2 reverse angstrom, and resolution from 5 to 20%. The important thing that this instrument is installed at cold moderator, so it will be a special instrument designed for application with a cold moderator. You can see here modeling of the bender, and it was already fabricated by Miratron company and installed at the beamline. Based on the calculation result, we chose design of the bender of 2 meter length with 20 super mirror slits. You can see here that we get quite a good distribution of the neutrons over the array of this bender. And here you can see measurements of the neutron flux before and time band and after bender. And you can see this is a Foucault moderator, 30k. We have movement of the intensity to the cold wavelengths, and so it will be possible to use this instrument for effective studies of different nanosystems and also for energy selective imaging. And it's planned that this instrument will have about 2 multiplied to 10 to 6 power neutrons per centimeter square per second as intensity in SANS mode, in about 5 multiplied to 10 to 6 power at imaging mode. And so that's all that I wanted to say you. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you very much, Denis, for this very informative and detailed presentation, which has left with us something like minus 1 minute for discussion. Nevertheless, I would like to ask you, do you have some questions, comments, or yes, Pavel?
Thank you very much for the presentation. And my question is, how you estimate what is the ratio between studies related to basic science and to applied science? Because you present here different examples. And what is the ratio and how it develops in future? Is it any kind of politics, scientific politics, in this question, which was directed by the GINR, by laboratory?
I would estimate the ratio between fundamental and applied research is about 70 to 30%. So now we have a fundamental research. In principle, there are no special restrictions, and it's just historical development of the different research areas in our laboratory. So this is more or less scaled like this for last at least 10 years. So it will depend on further trends, and that this ratio is not fixed, it can be changed if you get new teams of fundamental for applied research. It's just current state.
Further questions, comments, please? Oh, yes, Pavel.
I have a short question concerning this Fourier diffractometer. Is it really suitable for the residual stress measurement? Because such extremely high resolution usually is not used. And therefore, after using such diffractometer for residual stress measurement, it is extremely high consuming, time consuming, such experiment. How long does it take such measurement typically?
Okay, what I can say that normally at research in residual stress with a Fourier stress diffractometer, I think you asking about that. Normally we supply the analysis of residual stresses also by analysis of the behavior of the widths of diffraction peaks to get information about micro stresses and micro deformations. And if you want to get all this information, it's better to have a high resolution also to study the behavior of microstresses and microdeformation. And the typical measurements, it's about, I think, several hours per point. I think 2 hours, 4 hours per one point, of course.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. If there are no more questions and comments, I think all these IBR2 related issues can be discussed in more detail tomorrow. Once again, thank you once again to the speaker.
Thank you.
And let me announce the next presentation, which will be given by Evgeny Lukin, High Pressure Neutron Diffractometer DN6 for investigation of microsamples under extreme conditions, recent results. So please, Evgeny.
Good day. Thank you for the introduction. So I would like to, first of all, to say big thanks for my team, for Dr. Denis Petrovich Kozelenko, Sergei Evgeniyevich Kichanov, Dr. Boris Nikolaevich Savenko, and Dr. Anton Vladimirovich Rutkauskas for their support and for big advice in the questions of development of our diffractometer. In my talk, I will present. Where is this one? In my talk, I will present the last activities of upgrading of high-pressure neutron diffractometer DN6 for investigation of microsamples under extreme condition. Also, I would like to present you some results of our experiments with various anvil cells, especially with the diamond anvil cells. I would like to remind you that the neutron diffraction at high pressure is a modern state-of-art technique actively developed in leading world neutron centers like LB, ELL, IR8, ISIS, PCI, PSI, CNS, GPARC. In Dubna, on our reactor, IB2, there are two high-pressure diffractometers, the DN12 and one new DN6. The difference between these two diffractometers already are noticed in the report of my colleague Sergei Evgeniyevich Kichanov in 2013. And just remind you that the grain factor at that time was 12. Now I can say with the confidence that the capabilities of the DN6 diffractometers in cooperation with analogous diffractometers available on other European neutron centers are quite the same and in some time succeed the last ones. For instance, neutron diffraction patterns of sample under pressure are about 35 GPa in diamond anvil cells were already obtained in 2015, and several days ago we achieved a 40 GPa in diamond anvil cells. However, exposition time is still up to 2 days for one pressure point in diamond cells compared to the synchrotron sources. That's why all our activities in the field of modernization are concentrated in increase of beam flux and efficiency of detector system, like a broadening the solid tank of detector system. Before my talk about last year activities, I would like to describe the general components of DN6 diffractometer. It consists of the splitter, which is split beam line to two beam lines 6A and 6B. The background chopper synchronized with the pulses of a reactor, this one, is located before the splitter and count unnecessary tails of top spectra. The curved neutron guide reducing the flux, this one. Reducing the flux of fast neutrons. Until middle of 2017, there were a straight section, smooth neutron beam profile after curved one, and collimator placed after neutron guide, releasing the beam to 5 millimeters in diameter from the total beam formed by neutron guide. The sample is surrounded by the detector system consists of two rings. This detector system, as I said, consists of two rings. The first ring occupies scattering angle from 87 to 93 degrees. It consists of six sub-rings within 16 counts in each sub-ring. The covering of this detector is made from the polyethylene, boron polyethylene, with the inner side by plates of cadmium. This detector was developed, designed and developed in 2015. The second detector ring is divided into 16 sectors in the same gas volume. It covers scattering angle from 37 to 42 degrees. Each sector consists of a frame with six anode wires separated by textile plates that act as cathodes. The total number of independent detection elements, as in the case of the first rings, is 96. The working pressure of helium-3 in these rings is 4 bar. By the middle of 2016, it became clear that too much time was spent on experiments with the diamond angle cells. Possible errors in the alignment and conformation of the cells with respect to the neutron beam were detected on neutron spectra only after 6 or 8 hours of our experiments. On the other hand, the use of only 5% of the neutron beam due to the collimation after the straight part. Led us to decision to replace the direct part of neutron guide with the neutron focusing device. The first principle with vertical convergence of focusing device are shown here. It's worth this one, and we have now this like this one focusing device. The calculated gain factors for various shapes and coating allows to choose the most optimal variant of the focusing device. So, the development of new focusing device was ensured to the Swiss Neutronics company. Our laboratory already had a successful experience of cooperating with this company. In 2016, the company developed a neutron guide for Fourier diffractometer. For our purpose, they offer vertical parabolic tapered neutron guide with the parallel profile in horizontal plane and the parabolic tapered in vertical. This guide consists of 4 mirror sections. 3 of these has a covering with M3 on the top and bottom mirrors, and the side mirrors M equal to 1. And the last unit has a covering M equal to 5 on the top and bottom mirrors, and the side mirrors has a coating M1. So the total average reflectivity of top and bottom mirrors, despite the highest degrees of correctness, is 92%. And the reflectivity of size mirrors is 99%. I would like to say big thanks to these guys, Alexander Hunt and Nika Schaper, for their hard work during the July of 2017 in time of installation of this new focusing device. And the length of new focusing device is 7 meters. The intensity distribution on the various distances of the flange of the focusing device were obtained during the first September cycle. These pictures were obtained in the first September cycle of our reactor with the help of neutron tomograph box. The most optimal focusing distance was found. It's 87 centimeters from the flange to the sample position was found, and the diffractometer was aligned to this point. On the right, there are neutron patterns of vanadium before and after modernization, and the gain factor. As you see, the gain factor, average gain factor is about 6-7. The diffractometer slightly lost the resolution because of the angular, some angle divergence of focusing device, but still remains quite comparable with the resolution of diffractometer DN12. Due to the high neutron flux on the sample after modernization and wide solid angle of the detector system, the gain factor of DN6 compared with the DN12 now is about 35, as said Dr. Denis Petrovich Kozlenko. It is enabled to reduce both the time of experiments with the high pressure cells and to expand the pressure region up to 50 GPa because the opportunity to use not only sapphire anvils but also diamond anvils it becomes. Now it is used three types of anvils in high pressure experiments on our diffractometer. Sapphire with a standard coolant size 4 millimeters. Sapphire with a coolant size 2 millimeters, and the diamonds with various coolant size from 0.4 to 1.2 millimeters. And also we have various types of cells using in high pressure experiments. It's sapphire anvil cells, and by the end of 2070 we have already manufactured the new cells for diamond anvils. And of course we now use in common Almax plates in our high pressure experience with diamond anvils. The high pressure diffraction experiments with the high absorption components in standard sapphire anvils due to high brilliance of diffractometer are reasonable on DN6. Such experiments in pressure regions up to 7 GPa successfully carried out on DN6 diffractometer. One of these examples is the multiferroric dysprosium magnum O3 with a complex magnet structure, and you can see clearly the neutron patterns of this multiferroic with a good magnetic signals despite of the dysprosium has a very big high absorption cross section. The success of the experiments with the standard sapphire anvils prompted us to increase the region of the pressure from 7 to 13 GPa. By using the sapphire anvils as a reduced coolant size, the volume of the sample reduced. That did not stop to get the quality neutron patterns. In the features of neutron patterns of copper oxides obtained in pressure up to 11 GPa from the first and the second detection rings are shown. It should be noted that these patterns are clearly distinguishable and suitable for analysis by retort method. There is another sample of our experiment of diffraction data from magnetite. For comparison, in this pattern are shown the powder diffraction data under ambient pressure, the lowest one, in the standard sapphire anvils, the middle one, and in the small anvils, the highest one. And it should be noted that these patterns are clearly are still not prevented analysis of the structure of the investigation compounds. One of the most important tasks is the implementation of high-pressure diamond anvil cells on DN6 diffractometers. The Burley Almax plates are currently used for these aims, since they have an aperture to theta from 0 to 40 degrees. It's open window in the back of these plates. And vertical opening 90 degrees. The diameter of the diamond anvil coulee size varies from 0.4 to 1.2 millimeters. Basically, diamonds are used with the coulee size with the coulee size 0.6 and 0.8 millimeters, and we can achieve pressures up to 34-35 GPa with this coulee size. For the last one, the volume of the sample in the diamond anvil cells is about 0.02 cubic millimeters. One of the most important, despite the fact that the sample volume decreased more than 2 orders of magnitude compared with the conventional high-pressure experiments on DN12 diffractometers, we were able to identify the neutron diffraction patterns fitted by retreat method. The time spent on one point of pressure is about 48 hours. To get good neutron diffraction data on low background, it is necessary to conduct a well-sampled preparation of the experiment. For this purpose, we use a very good lab for experiment preparation. Hole drilling machine for drilling holes by spark in the gasket for samples. Microscope for adjusting the anvils and the cadmium slits collimators. Gas loading system for clearing a gas medium transmitting the pressure within the volume of the sample in order to obtain the hydrostatic pressure. So we hope that we get not only 50 GPa, but also in 1 megabar further. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Evgeny, for this fantastic presentation. I personally am really impressed. I've been really impressed that you can make such really cutting-edge studies on such tiny samples. So let me invite you to make some comments and possibly questions. Oh, Pavel, please.
I have two technical questions. Uh-huh. First is related to the last slides, and the question is, did you estimate what value of magnetic moment should be on the atom in the lattice structure to be able to produce diffraction picture at such kind of pressure of 35 or 40 GPa? This is first. Okay, that's the second will be afterwards.
one Bohr magnetite. Yes.
So order of one Bohr magneton.
Yes.
Yeah. And another question is, you presented the table where you compared the time necessary for measurements at different instruments.
Uh-huh.
At LLB and at ICES and at DN6. Uh-huh. Yeah. And the question is, how this time was obtained? Does it mean that the same sample of the same volume
measured on
these instruments? What is the meaning of this time?
Yes, it depends on the coulee size, of course. For 4 hours, maybe less, 2 hours, it's four standard samples. Anvils with the coulee size of 2 millimeters, or sample diameter of 2 millimeters. After that, it's broadened to 20 hours. It depends on the coulee size and the samples what we measure. Some samples can scattered very well, some can not so good, have so good scattering. So it's for sapphire. For diamond, it's from the 0.1, from 1 millimeter at 24 hours up to said 0.6 millimeters 48 hours. It depends of coolant size, yes.
For comparison, it's necessary to be under the same conditions and to understand what you can get from the experiment. So the same volume, same size.
You need exact information about the size and the time of acquisition time.
Okay, we will discuss later.
Okay,
okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I don't see any other questions. In this case, thank you once again. And let us proceed with the next presentation before the coffee break. It will be given by Dorota Hudoba, Scientific Secretary of the Frank Laboratory. Information about realization of FLMP GINR user program. I would like to announce immediately that after Dorota's talk, I would like to make a co-referate. We have not checked each other, so there may be some kind of overlap between our presentations, and I would like to suggest to discuss both after my co-referate. So please, Dorota, the floor is yours.
Нет, ну худоба, да? Вот это. Okay. Thank you. Dear Mr. Chairman, dear members of the PAC, dear ladies and gentlemen. Today in my talk I would like to split my talk to two parts. In first part, I would like to present some basic information about our user program. In the second part, I would like to present a statistic for the years 2015-2017. So, start with the basic information. Our user program is working from 2012, but in February 2014, the management of user program went from the Department of Condensed Matter Physics to the group of scientific secretary. Actually, in our group of user program are working three persons. Me, one person for responsible for technical support, and one person responsible for visa and travel support. For financial support is responsible all the time head of the Department of Condensed Matter Physics, Denis Kuzmenko. The distribution of proposals in our user program is between internal users and general science community in the ratio of 35% for internal proposals and 55% for external regular proposals. 10% we leave for external urgent beam time request. This is theoretically. In fact, the numbers can change. And actually, any scientist from any country of the world can apply for the beam time on our facilities. The different is just scientists from the member states of our institute get additional financial support from our institute. We have two kinds of applications. One, fast access applications, and the second, regular access applications. For the fast access, we don't have deadline. The submission is via email to facility responsible, and in this case we have quite a quick review by the person responsible of facility and the head of department. The second kind of applications, it's regular access applications. We have deadlines, we have internet submissions via the website, and two steps review procedure. And about this kind of applications, I will tell a few words more. Deadlines. Actually, we are working in two rounds. First round, the period for proposal submission is in the autumn, and the deadline is 15th of October. And then experiments are in the first part of the next year. The second round, deadline for the proposal submission is in the 15th of April, and experiments can be carried out in the second half of year. From this table you can see that we have more or less 2 months, sometimes it's more than 2 months, from the deadline of proposal submission to information about experiments to the users. Our proposals, submitted proposals, are evaluated by two committees, technical and scientific. In our scientific committees, we have three this kind of subcommittees. One for atomic and magnetic structure. We have seven instruments there and seven experts. The second one is for lattice and molecular dynamics, two spectrometers and three experts. And the biggest one for nanosystems and soft matter. We have one spectrometer for small angle scattering and three reflectometers and 15 experts. In this year, I hope we will have 10 experts in first committee and 17 experts in nanosystem and soft matter. Each proposal have two expertise, scientific expertise. And now I would like to present how it works from the user application to the information about experimental time. So user applied on our website. Then after deadline, our colleague from user office responsible for technical support inform our instruments responsible and ask them to make technical expertise. They applied this expertise on our website. After that, I prepare documents for the heads of expert committees about information about each proposals, continuations, reports, and so on. And I send this to heads of expert committees and ask them to make distributions between experts, distributions of proposals between experts. When they finish distribution, I prepare for each expert, I prepare a packet of documents. So, description about proposals, continuation proposals, and so on, whole history, and also reports. I send this information to experts, and they make evaluations on our websites. When they finish, our colleague from user office ask instruments responsible to make schedule. When they finish schedule, they ship this to a colleague from user office, and she applied it she downloaded it on our website. Then automatically user get information about experimental time and comments from the from experts. After that, user should contact with local contacts and with person from user office to organize travel and visas and so on. Of course, very important should be experimental reports. Actually, each user has 3 months for this. After experiments, each user should download reports on our websites. These reports are very important to for experts during new evaluations of new applications. About these reports, statistics, I will tell a little bit later. I will show you about it. Also very important is publications policy. This I will not comment. Just each user which is working with local contacts here in Dubna should take into account that this local contact should be in co-authors in our publications. This is first part. The second part, statistics. I will start with this. That's from in 2015, our reactor was working in 9 cycles for physics experiments. It was 2,646 hours. In 2016, one cycle was cancelled due to the technical reasons. So 8 cycles. And 2,447 hours. In 2017, last year, it was 9 cycles and 2,471 hours for physics experiments. In this time, in 2015, we get 197 submitted proposals, accepted was were 189. In 2016, it was 242, and accepted 208. And last year, just 221, and accepted 203. This distributions by facilities. You can see also, so blue is 2015, red 2016, green 2017. The highest number of proposals, of course, of the HUMO spectrometers, then high resolution Fourier diffractometer and SCAT diffractometers. We can observe increasing of applied proposals on HUMO spectrometers or RTD diffractometer, on grains reflectometer and SCAT spectrometers and epsilon spectrometers, and on the anodes it is different. Here you can see distributions by science for 2015, 2016 and 2017 in the bottom. We can observe decreasing of percent of proposals dedicated to physics experiments. You mentioned that for bioscience it's a quite small number, but this number is more or less stable this last years, 8%, 6% and 9%. We have a little bit, this is quite actually this is made so that users applied for proposals, they choose science. So you can see that in 2016, material science was not so popular. But now it's the highest number of proposals was dedicated for material science, 36%. Now, statistics about reports. Actually, the rate of the numbers of experimental reports to the numbers of accepted proposals is shocking a little bit. In 2016, it was more or less 25% reports just. Now we have just 29 reports, but of course we are waiting because last experiments was in December, so they have still time for it. But of course maybe we should be a little bit more restricted for the users and thinking about reacted of new proposals without old reports. On this slide, I show you a statistic for the visitors. So people which physically come to us to prepare to carry out experiments. So the trend is an increasing trend. From 2015, it was 84 persons, 2016, 107, and 2017, 115. In the bottom, you can see this distribution by facility. The highest number of visitors is to the UMO spectrometer, and also SCAD spectrometer, diffractometer. We can observe also increasing users of coming users of on RTD diffractometer and decreasing of epsilon diffractometer. Here you can see distribution visitors in these 3 years by country. You can see that the most popular is Russia, so another institution from Russia, and the trend is also increasing. Increasingly also you can observe four people from Poland and from Slovakia. Also, big number of users come from Germany. And very important for us, instruments scientific outcome. Last years, we observe increasing of number of publications, which we get from experiments carried out on our on spectrometers working in our user program. Here you can see that in 2015 the highest number of publications was from NIRA spectrometer, then UMO and high-resolution Fourier diffractometer. But the best paper was from experiments carried out on diffractometer DN12 with impact factor 5 and 6. In 2016, the highest number of publications we get from high resolution Fourier diffractometer. The second place have UMO spectrometer and diffractometers with experiments under high pressure. And the best paper was from experiments carried out on DN12, published in Nature Chemistry with the impact factor 27 and 0.9. And last last year, the highest number of publications from UMO, 33%. And then a high resolution Fourier diffractometer and 28% and diffractometer DN12, 16%. And the best paper was from experiments carried out on the high resolution diffractometer, Fourier diffractometer, published in Journal of Power Sources with impact factor 6.4. And that's all. I invite you for more information on our website, and thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Dorota. I have been really impressed. That was an excellent presentation. I have heard already many, many presentations about the user program, but this one is both concerning its content and also its format. It is really excellent. So I would even suggest to put it somehow on the website to make it available to the users, maybe in a little bit changed form. Thank you once again, and as I told you, I would now like to show you a few comments on that. Okay, we have to wait for the screen, but anyway, this comment is concerning one aspect of Dorota's presentation, and this is a technical one. It seems to be a technical one, but it's very important. It is the web application which is used by the users, by the user office, and also by the reviewers. So, okay. No, I can do it, hopefully. Yeah, okay. So, this was my view of the process, but Dorota has shown it in much more detail, but I think more or less this still fits. So who are the actors of this IBR2 proposal process? These are, first of all, the proposers and the co-proposers who submit a proposal. Then there are the local contacts, the beamline scientists. Actually, Dorota made a difference between local contacts and instrument responsibles. That's of course, correct, the IBR2 spectrometers. Then the FLMP scientific secretary, which, as far as I understand, is more or less the same as the user office. Am I right? So I don't know whether it's only you. I have been in touch with you, only with you, but okay, maybe there are hidden some other people behind. Then the chairs of the expert groups, and I'm speaking because I am one of the chairs, and I am actually the chair of the expert group which has the highest load to our expert group are coming something like half of all proposals. Then the expert group members, who are actually the reviewers, and finally the directorate, who at least formally meets the decision. Now, the steps of the proposal process, actually shown by Dorota in more detail, the main proposer uploads the proposal to the web application, then the scientific secretary, or the user office, I don't know, assigns the proposal in the web application to the expert groups and notifies the expert group chairs. Reports on the precursor experiments, if available, are sent in an email separately. So this is not involved, not included in the web application, and this is already a technical burden. Then the expert group chairs assign the proposals in the web application to the reviewers, the expert group members. Each proposal should be assigned to two reviewers, taking into account their expertise, conflict of interest, they may happen to submit a proposal themselves, proportional load, and in case of a continuation proposal, the person of the reviewer of the previous proposal, which is an off-like task of the expert group chairs. Now, the scientific secretary notifies the reviewers and sends them the available reports on precursor experiments in separate emails. This is also not integrated in the web application. The reviewers access the proposals again offline, also taking into account reports on precursor experiments. They upload their scores and reports to the web application. The scientific secretary or the user office, this has also been shown by Dorota, may discuss the reviews with the local contacts or instrument responsibles and drafts this decision, and the final decision is met by the directorate. Now, the present web application demands a lot of unnecessary manual work from the scientific secretary, the EG chairs, and the reviewers. That with increasing number of proposals results in delays of the processes now up to 3 weeks. So I have been following this process since something like 3 or 4 years, and the delay was always increasing. And don't blame Dorota, don't blame the scientific secretary. This is the web application is a real bottleneck, and the unnecessary work is really hindering performing this task as fast as it should actually happen. The shortcomings of the present web applications are that it does not support an online work of the scientific secretary, the EG chairs and reviewers. The manual copy-paste work is very time-consuming, and it is the source of possible errors. It supports no direct access either to experimental reports of precursor experiments or to previous proposals of the proposers and co-proposers. I would like to make a comment at this point. Sometimes it happens that proposers who are not going to submit their experimental reports of precursor experiments, they declare an experiment which is in fact a continuation proposal, they declare it to be a new proposal. And okay, this trick may sometimes work, sometimes it's discovered, and I don't think this should be the task of the EG chairs. This should be an automatic function of the web application. Further, it does not support selecting the reviewers by the EG chairs with respect to their expertise, conflict of interest, proportional load, and in case of continuation proposal, the person of the reviewer of the previous proposals. As a makeshift, but it's only a makeshift, missing functions of the web applications have been provisionally and partially supported by offline spreadsheets, which have been elaborated by Dorota and myself, which will be now shown separately. However, these functions should be integrated in the web application, resulting in an up-to-date system similar to those used by authors, editors, and referees of scientific journals. This requires an estimated effort about 6 months. This is just my personal estimate, but I have some experience in this kind of work, of a professional web programmer in close interaction with the FRMP directorate and the scientific secretary. So that would be the proposed recommendation by the PAC. The PAC recommends the FRMP directorate to upgrade the IBR2 proposal evaluation web application to a professional system supporting the work of proposers, reviewers, and to consider entrusting with this task the Laboratory of Information Technology. So this it could be also a task for you, Georg, if you are willing to help the partner laboratory. Thank you very much. And could you show this? Um, Okay. Yeah.
I think I have to come a bit closer. So just let me show you how this should work. I think. Sorry. Yeah. Okay.
So this is, for example, such a spreadsheet in Excel. I don't know whether you can see it really well. Probably it's not enough. Could we increase the size? I don't know. Yes, okay, if you can. Okay, that's probably better. So, for example, this is the instrument name. These are the proposals. If you click on the proposal, then immediately, of course, its content will be shown. But we have done it now manually. This should be integrated in the. Can we go back now? In the web application. Also, how to distribute. Okay. Can we move that? Okay. How to distribute it here? Yeah. Okay. To how to assign it to several reviewers. The web application should check the task assigned to one reviewer. Here you can see it. It is also not supported right now. Again, how much has already been assigned to a reviewer. Right now it is everywhere, of course, two, and so on and so on. And would not waste the time. I could show you a similar spreadsheet which can be used by the reviewers themselves. But once again, this is right now a manual work, and the fact that it should be copied and uploaded and so on, this is very time consuming, and it is a source of possible errors. So I think it is really necessary to develop an up-to-date web application that will make the user program also in this respect really a cutting edge one. So thank you very much for your attention, and now you are invited to put questions and comments, first of all, to Dorota's presentation, but I'm also ready. Please, Professor Schietzel.
So, Professor Nagy, I would like just to thank you for your criticism of our system of proposal submission and evaluation, and I can promise that we will do that very soon. So I think that which you have demonstrated really have to be implemented here also.
Yeah, thank you very much, and let me also offer my technical help. I will be happy to contribute.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
It is surprising that how many reports in comparison with the proposal are coming after performing the experiment. Can you explain your meaning about the reason why it is? Because it is at least unpolite from the user not to send a report.
So actually, we ask users, and they know that each proposal is get some points from experts, and they know that. Without reports, they will get less points, so they can get less time for experiments. But yeah, this is the problem. Maybe if we will be more strict and if they will not download reports, and we will reject the proposals, maybe it will be works.
Let me add to it that sometimes it also happens that proposers include a kind of report in their new proposal. But this is not the correct way. They should it submit separately. That's expected. Yes, please.
Okay, continuing this topic, I saw some discrepancy between number of reports per year and number of publications. These were, because from 2017, there was like 70-something publications, as far as I remember well, and at the same time, the reports were 25. Is this accumulated number of publications? Because, okay, in 2017, you can publish measurements that you did in 2014, for example. How do you explain this discrepancy?
Can you answer this question?
If I can answer, actually, we in our department we have 181 publications, and this 78, if I am not wrong, it's just from data which was carried out on our facilities, our instruments, and this is 78. Publication just from 2017.
Again, a comment to this. I don't see a direct relation between experimental reports and publications. And all experiments should be followed by an experimental report, full stop. It happens, of course, very often that there are experiments which are not successful, which should be extended, and so on, and so on, and so on, and they should, of course, result in publications. Yeah, yes, Dorota.
So actually, experimental reports, they are not publications. And in a report, we need to know that the experiment was carried out and what's going on. And publications, it's separately from the reports.
Experimental report is a strictly internal document because some results are written which have not been published yet. Of course, it's not a publication at all.
I understand. Just I was wondering if somebody bothered to write a publication, then he didn't bother to write the report. This is crazy. But sorry.
Okay. Just thank you. Any further? Toby, please.
I was just going to say that if the penalty for not writing an experimental report, which is something which doesn't accumulate any kudos for an experimenter in their home institution, if there's no penalty, then they're not going to write one. It's as simple as that. So looking at the acceptance ratio, about approximately 90% of proposals are accepted. Therefore, the penalty for not writing an experimental report is essentially not there in practice, and so people are not going to do something that doesn't actually result in a penalty.
Overbooking is not very high.
Exactly.
Well, actually, it very much depends on the instrument. At UMO, it's very high. In case of SCAT, I think it's also close to 100% or above 100%. Grains is now also increasing, but there are some instruments which have never been overbooked.
But from other side, there are 35% of beam time delivered to internal users. So and now we have more or less one sort of reports. Does it mean that only internal reports and nobody externally sending something, or internal people are not writing reports?
It's both.
Question. My question goes to the statistics of acceptance. You showed in your slide that almost more than 90% of applications are accepted. But nonetheless, some fraction is rejected. How do you manage to resolve the conflicts or complaints? There are.
So actually, I don't remember that someone complained because rejected of proposals officially, but many, maybe not many, some of these rejected proposals, they are just rejected in this round because not enough time for experiments. And resubmit. and then resubmitted in the next round. So, but usually it's not, we don't fight with anyone.
So I would say that you have really should take a lot of care to increase the number of proposals submitted. Probably have to take serious steps in propaganda, let's say, of the source, because the overbooking factor 1.1 is enormously low. You cannot really select good proposals in this case. So really have to do something with respect to, propagation of possibilities here to go to different conferences, to do something, what other facilities are doing either.
We do also.
So thank you. I don't see any further hands raising, so thank you once again, first of all, Dorota. And now we will have a coffee break of 20 minutes as usual.